The second reading is from Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 27. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now, and not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for adoption, the redemption of our bodies. For in hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we ought. But that very Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for words. And God, who searches the heart, knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. The word of the Lord.
As we celebrate Pentecost, we talk about God's wonderful gift of the Spirit, and it's hard to talk about the Spirit without using various images. And many of them are familiar: wind, fire, a dove. But I wanted to focus on that reading from Romans today because I think it takes us to some different images. And I want to lift up three different images from that reading from Romans. The first image is this: the Spirit at work in all of creation. The Spirit as creator, as co-creator with God. In Genesis, the very beginning, it said, when God created the heavens and the earth, the Spirit was already hovering over the waters. The Spirit was already a presence there, a co-creator with God, as God formed all of the world and the universe. Paul, in the letter to the Romans, says that connection is still there. The Spirit is still at work in creation and needs to be. Why? Well, because, as he says, creation is right now subjected to futility. That means it's hurting. Something's not right. And why is that? Well, it says, according to Paul, that creation is waiting with eager longing for something. And what is that? He says very clearly, he's waiting for the children of God to be revealed. Now, what's that about? Well, in Genesis, as we saw, the original vision of God, the original purpose of God, was that all things would be in harmony and live together. We would live in harmony with God. I love that image that after God created the garden, he would come in the cool of the evening to walk with his creatures and talk with them and commune with them. What a beautiful image. We were meant to live in fellowship and relationship with God. We were meant to live in relationship with each other. As it said, the male and the female were naked and they were not ashamed. They were in communion. There was nothing separating them. And we were to be living in relationship with all of creation. The Bible says we were to be stewards of creation. Some have translated it, we are to have dominion, but that's not the case. We are to work in partnership with creation to help it become more fully what it is intended to be. We still have that ability to some extent. Think about it. The way we have genetically engineered crops so that they are ever more fruitful and bear much more grain, The Green Revolution is amazing, the way that we have worked in harmony with nature for the blessing of all. Medicine, we have worked and we have taken the natural elements and we have eradicated diseases. It's amazing. We've made the world a better place. This was intended to keep continuing, but we stepped away from that in the Garden of Eden, didn't we? We stepped away from creation and said, we're going to try and live apart from it, in opposition to it even, and we hurt. Our relationship with God was broken, our relationship with each other was broken, and certainly our relationship with all the earth was broken, broken deeply. And creation suffers. Pollution, extinction, we are literally fouling our own nest. So no wonder creation is waiting for a change in us. Because once we are restored to our role and stop hurting creation, all of creation will breathe a huge sigh of relief. We think that creation needs to be different, but the problem is us. We lost the ability to relate as we should with all of creation. We are intended to have an impact on the earth, but in partnership, working together. And so creation is groaning in labor pains. It can't wait for the children of God to make an appearance. Second image. Paul says very clearly, the Spirit helps us to pray. What a beautiful image. The Spirit is the one who is working with us to help us to pray. And what does that look like? Not exactly what we expect. It says, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we ought. And who hasn't felt that about prayer? We struggle, we try different prayer practices, and we keep thinking, well, I must be doing something wrong here. I don't get the results I think that I should have. So if the Spirit helps us, how is the Spirit going to accomplish that? Well, here's the secret. The Spirit does the work. The Spirit intercedes on our behalf, as it says, with sighs too deep for words. What are these sighs too deep for words? We think it's kind of like just prayer then just becomes a matter of just expressing our exasperation, huh? When things get too bad, we just go, God, that's not it. What if these sighs too deep for words are meant to be taken literally? What if prayer is first and foremost not primarily about words? You know, Jesus' disciples literally had to beg him to give them a prayer with words to say. They literally came to him and said, John the Baptist, he has all these followers, and he's teaching them all sorts of prayers, and we don't even have one prayer from our great teacher yet. Why can't we have one? And so Jesus finally gives them the Lord's Prayer. Why this reluctance on his part? Well, we know what Jesus taught about the Pharisees' prayers, the ones who made a grand display and show of saying their prayers aloud. He said they were empty. And he could not make a more stark contrast to that way of praying. He said, when you pray, go into your closet and pray in secret. And as I pointed out before, where is the closet? In the first century when Jesus, they rooms didn't have closets. So where is the closet? Where is the secret place where you go? It's the place of the heart. And he says, your Father will hear that prayer. He will hear the Spirit's groans in your hearts because God knows the mind of the Spirit, and the Spirit prays for us in accordance with God's will. We don't have to worry then, are we praying in accordance to God's will or are we not? Look what this means. It means that God is praying through us. Prayer is a conversation first and foremost within God, between the Spirit and God and Jesus. Prayer is already happening because it's already God's action. There's something already in us trying, yearning to touch God. One author said, we are God's prayer. Think of that. We are what God is praying into being, and we're just invited to enter that conversation that's already happening. Well, how do we do that? How about we just be quiet? You've all heard that verse, be still and know that I am God. We take it as such a gentle thing. Be still, you know, get the chimes going and the New Age music going in the background, and then you can know God. It's interesting, in the Bible, if you read this verse in context, God is literally issuing this as a command. He's saying, be still, shut up, so you can know finally that I'm God. You know, at baptism, we ask the parents to promise to teach their children the Lord's Prayer. And in Sunday school and confirmation classes, we ask our young people to memorize the Lord's Prayer, and that is very, very important. But why don't we teach you to pray in silence as well? It's part of our heritage. Jesus taught it. Why don't we? I think part of it is because it's so much easier to use words, because when we use words, then we're in control. Then we make sure that we get what we think we need, right? But in silence and quiet, we give up that control. And the Spirit can finally work on us and in us. We can be simply open and empty to receive. This isn't just something I've made up. There's lots of the Christian teaching that goes with this. There's a wonderful teacher from the Middle Ages called Meister Eckhart, and he wrote this way about prayer. He says, the most powerful prayer, one that might be well nigh omnipotent, which means unstoppable, and the worthiest work of all, is the outcome of a quiet mind. The quieter it is, the more powerful, the worthier, the deeper, the more telling, and the more perfect the prayer is. To the quiet minds, all things are possible. What is a quiet mind? A quiet mind is the one which nothing weighs on, nothing worries, which frees from ties and all self-seeking, is wholly merged into the will of God, and is dead as to its own will. Such a one can do no deed in the world, however small, but it is clothed with something of God's power and authority. Or there's another famous author who we don't even know who it is, it's anonymous, who wrote a classic called The Cloud of Unknowing. And it says it the same thing, only in a different way. But this author says, lift up your heart to God with just a gentle stirring of love. What a beautiful way of looking at prayer. Just to sit quietly and just let your heart be lifted up in silence with a gentle stirring of love. Focus on God alone. Want God and not anything that God has made or will do for you. Think on nothing but God. Don't let anything else run through your mind and will. Here's how. Forget what you know. Forget everything God made and everybody who exists and everything that's going on in the world until your thoughts and our emotions are not focused on or reaching towards anything. Not in a general way, nor in a specific way. Let them be. For the moment, don't care about anything. This is the work of the soul that pleases God most. A third image here. It says the Spirit intercedes with these sighs. But again, it's not some little, oh, I wish something were different. It's a problem of translation here. Remember before when it said the whole creation is groaning in labor pains? Well, it's the same word here about the Spirit's sigh. The Spirit in us is groaning in labor. You know, we like to make fun of women in labor that with the intensity of it. You know, they might say things that they wouldn't say when they were free from that. But it's serious business, isn't it? It's hard work to give birth, to bring another human being into the world. We don't call it labor for nothing. A new life has been brought into the world. That's work, and that takes effort. And the Spirit is bearing down, straining to give birth to the new us, to the new creation. The Spirit is not content to let us live in the darkness of our separation or our ignorance or our fears. For the Spirit knows once we obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God, creation itself will be set free. We are to be the first fruits, and the rest are going to follow. This last week I came across an interesting meme. It said, the world needs more people who have come alive. Exactly, that's what we're talking about. The Spirit is working to bring more people alive in this world. Maybe I've made this too complicated. Maybe it's as simple as this. It's a poem that a friend of mine gave me. The poem says, do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize it and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy of rescue. Amen.